Good day, and welcome to the quarterly All-EN call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Rob Fath. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good afternoon, good morning to you, to those of you out west. Thank you for joining us for our quarterly All-EN call, and this is our first remote All-EN call. Given the pandemic, we have some updates and general information that we plan to share with you, and we would also like to welcome the new ENs and new EN staff joining this call today. Thank you for participating. First order of business, what we would like to do is to turn it over to Vernon Collins, who is in our suitability office, and Vernon's going to give us some updates on some changes with the suitability process given the current situation with the pandemic. So I'll turn it over to Vernon. Vernon?
Thank you, Robert. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. Pleasure to join the call. I did want to go over where we are right now as far as background investigations and suitability is concerned. We're business as usual with a couple of changes for those who are affected by the current pandemic. So the process has not changed. You still would submit your initial documentation the same way you have been, and then you would get the EQIP invitation. So at that point, for those of you who are in areas where you know, the businesses are still closed, you're still sheltering in place, or you know, you may have a pre-existing condition and don't feel safe going out at this time, we ask that once an applicant has completed the EQIP, so just to refresh, you send in the initial documentation, you get the initiation from us, the EQIP is ready, and the applicant completes EQIP. At that point, if you have applicants who are not able to get fingerprinted at this time, you can email us to the same email address that you started the process with. They'll include this email in the chat, but it's a dchr.ope.suitability@ssa.gov email. You email that mailbox and just let us know that, hey, Jane Doe has completed EQIP but is unable to get fingerprinted at this time. We will confirm to you that EQIP has been completed and let you know that we will put the case in process and that the applicant is to get fingerprinted once feasible. So luckily, all of our investigations go to OPM, and they've set it up to allow us to actually submit background investigations to them without fingerprints right now. Before, that wasn't an option, but we can do that now. So once once everything kind of calms down and we get back to semi-normal, we will be following up with those that we have processed without fingerprints. So you can still get people cleared through suitability. We just ask that if you have somebody who is unable to get fingerprinted, that after they've completed EQIP, that you let us know, and we'll put that person into process. One part of the process that is kind of a hassle that unfortunately we're unable to change is we still need actual signatures and actual dates by the applicants on those forms that you send in up front. So that's the Declaration for Federal Employment and the Fair Credit Reporting Act form. We actually still do need the applicants to sign and date those forms by hand. Of course, after that, you know, you can fax them and email them. That's fine. While I have this opportunity, I want to go over a couple of things that would help the process go smoother on both ends. The first thing is sending in complete forms. So there's only two paper forms that you have to fill in on the upfront part of the process. The Declaration for Federal Employment form is the one I want to focus on right now. There's about 7 yes-no questions on that form. And for each yes answer, there's a subset of information that is required underneath of that question. Now, very often we get these forms submitted with yes answers, either with no information or partial information. So this would make the process go faster for everybody. If you just make sure that your applicants, if they have any yes answers, if they've answered all the questions below. So, for instance, for federal debt, if there's a yes answer, the form asks for the year, the amount, the steps that you are taking to remedy that debt. So all of that should be included on that form. If not, they're going to have to go back and ask you for it. Along those same lines, if you can't submit student loan and federal debt information up front with the forms, I'll just advise you to have the applicants be prepared, because we're more than likely we're going to come back and ask for that information on the back end. So if you do have applicants who are delinquent on student loans or federal taxes, like I said, if you don't submit the information up front, before we get to the point where we actually make the approval, we will be reaching out for that. So that's something to keep in mind. Also, once we do the initial review of the cases, the front-end staff will usually send out emails if we need any additional information, or like I was saying before, if there were some forms that we need recompleted, they will reach out for that. And they generally have about 5 business days. So I really ask that if you get any of those additional information or correction request emails, that you respond to those timely, so the case can move through the system. Oftentimes when we patient, the case usually ends up in a pre-screen denial. Just so you know, there's 2 type of denial letters. A pre-screen denial letter is just stating that we need additional information from the subject before we can make our determination. In the case that you get an unsuitable letter, that means the individual has been found unsuitable to work on the EN. On those pre-screened denied letters, at the bottom of the letter is the name and email address of the HR specialist who has assigned that case. If the applicant is unsure what information is needed, they can reach out to that HR specialist to find out what's needed so we can get the case moving along. Also, if you read the description on the suitable letters, the actual suitable letter is merely a pre-screen type of approval, because the background investigation is actually started after you've been made suitable. So that letter is favorable and will remain favorable unless additional information comes that either changes our decision or we have to reach out and request additional information. So don't be alarmed, and please don't think you don't have to respond. If, say, 6 months into the process, you've been cleared for 6 months, and then you get an email asking for additional information. It's routine. Basically, that your investigation is pretty much closed, and we have to close some loops on our end before we make the final adjudication. That final adjudication typically will allow an individual to go from one federal agency to another without having to redo their background investigation. So please, if you get any of those emails months after the fact, we definitely still do need any applicants to follow up on the information that we request. If we get complete forms and federal tax and student loan information is ready, and if we can get any corrections we needed taken care of, like I said, usually get about 5 business days before they close that case out non-compliant, we're going to be fine. Everything should fly through the process. Again, once your applicants have completed EQIP and they're unable to get fingerprinted at this time, just email our mailbox and let us know. We'll put the case into the queue to be worked. Also, please don't mail anything to our office right now, because our office is closed. The whole process we have is electronic, but we do allow for those, sometimes some folks in some rural areas, they don't necessarily have a field print location to go to that's close where they can get fingerprinted. So we do allow hard copy fingerprints to be mailed in from time to time. But at this time, you don't mail any packages to the office. If that's the situation, you can also email that same mailbox and let us know that that's your current situation as well. Other than that, like I said, we're business as usual. We can still get people through the process. I guess we can open it up for questions if anybody has any at this time.
And if you
thank
like
you for all that information, Vernon. Yes, Cassie, go ahead and help us out with that.
If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We have no questions at this time.
Hi, this is John. We do have one question in the web queue. Our question comes from Shelley Paquette, who asks to clarify if there is supporting documentation for the yes answers on the declaration form, such as repayment plan for a debt. Do we send this with the document or just have it ready?
They can send it with the document on the initial submission if they have it available. If not, I'm just trying to give everybody a heads up that it's probably going to come a point in time where we're going to ask for that information, which is going to take a while if the applicant, you know, has to go and obtain it. So they have it up front and can send it. That's the best case scenario. But at the worst, they should be working on getting that information so when the time comes, it could be a quick turnaround when we ask for it.
And that's the only question we have from the web queue.
Thank you. Kathy, just a quick check in the queue.
Once again, that is star 1 for questions. Still no questions at this time.
Well, thank you so much, Brenna. We do appreciate you helping us out with all that valuable information. What we'll do at this time is we'll send this back over to Rob Powell.
Thank you, Adele, and thank you, Vernon. Greatly appreciated. Just to pick back up on the agenda here, just a couple of updates on Social Security and how Social Security is doing Ticket to Work program-wise pertaining to the current pandemic. Many of you know, and for those of you who may not know, we are all working remotely, including the ticket program manager. It is business as usual for us, and in terms of the actual program itself and what we're seeing as far as participation, such as new assignments and so forth, we see a slight drop-off in assignment, in ticket assignment, but not significant, and actually at the beginning of this, that was a big concern for all of us, was what would be the impact. So just to give you some context for that, the average number of assignments daily this current fiscal year is 127 tickets assigned per day, and that is a slight increase over last year up to today. The average daily assignment in FY19 per day was 123, so we're actually ahead of where we were last year, and in 2018 we were at 104 average assignment tickets assigned per day. So the program is still robust. I'm looking at some data that we are tracking on a daily basis in terms of assignment, and for the last couple of weeks we've assigned around 400 to 500 tickets per week. So we continue to sign new beneficiaries up. I've had anecdotal reports from ENs periodically, and we are going to hear from some ENs later in this call, and I want to thank them for participating in terms of how the pandemic has impacted them. But in one report that I received, I had an EN relay that they had seen beneficiaries lose a job with earnings of about $6 or $7 an hour, and then turn around and and accept another job making almost double that amount. So it depends on what industry. There's high demand for employment, of course, in retail, frontline type of businesses, Amazon, grocery stores, Walmart, things of that nature, huge demand, and they are raising salaries to attract workers. So I'm curious to hear some more in regards to what's occurring and what you're seeing out there as you're servicing beneficiaries. We don't have a time frame for returning to the office or for offices opening up. We do have information available to the public. So in other words, if you're trying to find out what's going on at your local field office, we would refer you to ssa.gov, and on the main Social Security webpage, there is a COVID-19 spot or banner that you can click on and get all the information about what services are being handled by field offices now, which are priority services, and which services are less of a priority or on hold. So all questions relating to that should go to the SSA.gov website, and you can get more information. And the only other update I would add in regards to the pandemic is, as you may be aware, site visits are on hold, likely not to occur this year, given where we are in the fiscal year. Our fiscal year ends September 30th, and our budgeted amount will expire at that time, and it is unlikely that we will be able to travel, before the end of the fiscal year. So that's one other update we wanted to add for that. I have a couple of updates for the marketing business process to share with you and some talking points. One big thing that we have done is we've worked really hard, both SSA and the ticket program manager, to make this more robust, expand participation, develop plans for expanding, and making it a better process. So a couple things I'm going to just cover briefly just to give you an update. We have 21 current ENs participating. We have 35 ENs waiting to come into the marketing business process. Our current capacity, this is a very labor-intensive initiative, is 75 ENs total. So as of right now, we're well below the maximum capacity. We are looking to enroll the 35 ENs that are waiting to participate by August, late August of this year, and we look for them to get their first files around September 14th. Of this year, if not sooner. Basically how we're going to onboard waiting ENs is we're going to onboard about 10 ENs per month to get everyone onboarded. And then if there are any that are waitlisted at that time, they will be added when, if and or when capacity allows. What we would recommend you to do, if you are interested in more information about the marketing business process, we would ask that you email data.marketing.poc@ssa.gov. And your organization can get more information or be added to the wait list as your request is received. It's important to note that, and for those of you who are unfamiliar with what the marketing business process is, SSA builds data files and shares these data files consisting of limited beneficiary contact information with employment networks so that the employment networks can conduct outreach to beneficiaries to market their organizations to beneficiaries and attempt to get the beneficiaries to assign their ticket to their organization. The purpose of this business process is to grow the number of participants, to expand the program, and increase outreach to more beneficiaries in the hopes of getting as many beneficiaries into the program and working as possible. So what we're looking for is, and what we do is we track data for participating employment networks to determine how they're doing in terms of assignment rate as it relates to the number of records they're receiving. Our goal is, or our target for participants, is roughly a 1% assignment rate. So as an organization, if you're interested in doing this, you have to factor in that whether or not your organization can conduct outreach to handle or reach out to 5,000, at least 5,000 beneficiaries and or more. And from that amount that you reach out to, can you handle a 1% assignment rate? Can your organization add another 50 tickets for 5,000, for example, 50 additional clients? So that's an important consideration for ENs who may be interested in participating in the marketing business process is capacity. This is sensitive information that we're sharing, so we want to make sure that organizations can use the number of records that we're sending over to them and have the business structure in place to effectively conduct outreach. So that's basically where we are. Again, we will make the mailbox available to you, and it will be attached in the notes after this call. And that's all the relevant news for the marketing business process. At this point, I will turn I'll turn the call over to Kara Kaplan, who's going to give us some updates and reminders for ENs. So, Kara, would you please?
Thanks, Rob.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Just to let you know, okay, we've closed out the APOR and the Security Awareness or 222. We had a 99% response rate for both, so that was awesome. However, we did terminate 7 ENs this year for a total of 83 tickets. APOR data will be updated in the Find Help really shortly. Oh, I apologize. I've got a kindergartner in the background. COVID-19 update. So we requested the form, the work from home forms from everybody, just so you would let us know what's going on. We've only had a 64% response rate for that. So there's 338 ENs that have still not responded. We'd like your EN to notify TPM, Maximus, and or Social Security if your EN is suspending all operations during the pandemic. You must also notify your ticket holders. If your EN is resuming operations but remotely, you need to submit a COVID-19 work from home form. So, and we did get a lot that bounced back to us. So it's another reminder that you guys really need to keep us updated on who your primary contacts are. TPM will send another reminder from the EN operations box this week. For our what we call our EN enhancement project, which basically means we are making sure that ENs are adhering to the terms and conditions of their TPA. So right now we're in phase two, and that means part three, section 9 of your TPA states that ENs are required to have at least 3 payments following their second year as an EN and get payments every year thereafter. So there were 52 ENs who fit into this category and were not adhering. So we reached out to them. We're working with most of them. We have terminated, however, 3 of them. So we just want to make sure that everybody's engaged with their beneficiaries, everybody's, you know, trying to get people back to work and adhering to the terms and conditions. So make sure you really know your TPA. And speaking of that, we're in the process of updating the current RFA / TPA. The most significant change that we're making is to allow ENs to use the cloud-based system, and it has to be the one that's approved by the agency. So, and that will be in the new RFA. It's about 11 pages worth of information just on cloud. So, but the cover letter that we will send with the PPA change will have the will highlight the changes. So, but we do want you to read the entire thing thoroughly, and your signatory authority must return it and sign it within the, you know, the date that's stated, which isn't decided yet because it's not out on the street yet. If it's not returned to us like last time, your EN will be in jeopardy of termination. And that is all I have. I believe Adela is next.
Thank you, Kara. We're going to go on to our next section, which is the impact of pandemic on EN business and services. I know lots of times we may think we're going through things on our own, but we are very fortunate that we have a few of our EN. They're going to share some of the tidbits that, with our current situation that we're going through, maybe will help us feel that we're not alone, or maybe they'll give us some tips on how we can continue to move forward with that. So, Cassie, if you can help us out, if you can bring on Ken Williams from Adelante just to share a little bit of how this impact of the pandemic is affecting business.
Ken Williams, please go ahead.
Good morning and or afternoon, everybody. Hope everyone's staying safe. My name is Ken Williams. I'm from Adelante Development Center's Ticket to Work program based out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. We are a national employment network, so we are pretty accustomed to providing, you know, a good deal of our services virtually. However, we have moved to a work-from-home environment during this time. Adelante's IT department was able to set us up with remote desktop access, which allows us, for the most part, to work as if we're still in the office, but in reality, we've been working from home. We incorporate Zoom to conduct one-on-one with our ticket holders, which allows us to continue the job development process. We can provide, you know, mock interviews, show how to update resumes, cover letters, provide job searches, and assistance with applications. We have been amazed, really, at how active our ticket holders have remained during this time. It has allowed us not only to continue to assign tickets, but place ticket holders with employers and move ticket holders to employers in related fields for career advancement. We also have a number of ticket holders that have been willing to look for employment that would help out their local community. We have one ticket holder that was working for a movie theater, and due to its closure, they're now working for one of the local retailers. Like Robert had made mention to you, there's a big influx in jobs in those areas and wage increases. We have another individual that was furloughed from one of the local retailers is now working for one of the local home supply employers to help them out during this time. And we also have a ticket holder willing to look at local employers to work as a delivery driver or even maybe a customer service represented for Amazon, again, as Robert had noted. We give just an enormous amount of credit to our ticket holders and appreciate that we've been able to continue, you know, to provide services during this time to all of them. Our business operations have really, you know, continued without too much difficulty. So that's kind of how things have been in our neck of the woods.
Thank you so much for sharing, Ken. Like I said, sure. Usually it's always been when we know that we're not alone doing this, and it's good to hear that your ticket holders are still going forward.
Yeah, we are too. It's been pretty amazing.
Wonderful. Okay, so we do have a few more folks who want to share some information. Cassie, if you could bring Becky Homer from Mission Possible on the line.
Please go ahead.
Okay. Hi, my name is Becky Horner, and we want to wish everyone well and hope that you and your companies and families are all doing well during these really interesting times. Mission Possible is a national EN with 130 tickets assigned, which are shared by two of us, and we are located in Vancouver, Washington. Our state, Washington State, has been hit fairly hard by coronavirus compared to some other states, and the governors on the West Coast seem to be a little bit more reluctant opening business as usual. All of us at Mission Possible already work remotely, so our jobs pretty much have continued as usual with the exception of being able to meet with local clients in person. We recently did a survey of our ticket holders to determine the extent that they have been impacted by the coronavirus with regard to their work or their search for work. And just from our regular communication with our ticket holders, we expected to find more of them impacted by the coronavirus than was actually determined, which was kind of mentioned with the speaker before. 33% of our ticket holders are working and have not been adversely impacted by coronavirus. We see this as an indicator that a number of our ticket holders are already working from home or work for essential services like retailers, Amazon, FedEx, UPS, Lyft, or our healthcare workers. Some of our employed are receiving hazard pay, so their income has gone up. About 11% of our ticket holders are not working due to coronavirus, and that includes those that have taken a leave of absence due to health concerns or have been laid off or furloughed and are collecting unemployment or trying to. Another 33% of our ticket holders are not yet working, but coronavirus has not changed their status one way or the other. Most of them are still continuing to look for work, but for various reasons have not found success. About 16% of our ticket holders were unavailable to survey. And one interesting observation that we have seen is that as remote work has become quite popular right now, ticket holders that we have that are seeking remote work or work from home are having much more success in that, more and more employers are allowing or encouraging workers to work from home. And we hope that this trend will continue past the coronavirus because a significant number of our ticket holders do want to work from home.
I find that very interesting, and I think most of us do, how you indicated that these are interesting times, and how even though they're interesting times, good things could come out of that, especially the part where the remote work has become more popular. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that information with us today.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's see. Melanie McGill with Career Source Broward.
Hi, everyone.
Melanie McGill.
Yep, that's me. So one of the things I wanted to find out also with the numbers that have continued ticket assignments, we've been pretty hit hard in I'm in Broward County, Florida, which is Fort Lauderdale area. We have not seen a number of ticket assignments coming in. We've had customers that have lost their job. Some have got jobs, one at Walmart and one at Social Security, actually. And but we've had a bunch that are afraid to go to work right now because of their disability. But one of the things, my staff is working remotely. They are contacting the customers and following up. We have implemented right signature, so we're able to send out forms and information to customers to sign and send back so that we don't have to send stuff via mail, which has been working very well. But we do a lot of follow-ups with our customers. We try and quell their nerves because they are very nervous of going back to work. That's about it.
Well, Melanie, I'm really sorry to hear about being hit hard and understand that folks are being afraid to go to work. And hopefully some of these things can help us and become more creative. And I'm glad that your staff is still being persistent, so continue to be positive and go forward. Thank you for sharing today.
You're very welcome.
No problem. Thank you. Rachel Hoffman from Choice Group, you have some information you want to share with us today.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Can you hear me? Yes, ma'am.
Wonderful. This is Rachel Hoffman with Choice Group, and we're here in Richmond, Virginia. It's nice to be in such good company today and hear what everybody else is doing. Obviously, we're all facing some similar challenges over here, and this has definitely been a season where we are getting to experiment with our flexibility and our creativity and try some new things. So for our agency, because we don't just do ticket to work, many of the other services we're providing are community-based, and those referrals are slowing down, which has kind of been a good thing for the ticket to work program, because some of those staff, while they're normally working on other things, are able to jump in, and we're able to actually serve some more ticket holders right now, which is fantastic. I will say we have a steady volume of calls with people who have questions about Social Security benefits right now because of the impact of unemployment. People have changes in their wages, their hazard pay, bonuses, all of these kinds of changes, folks who are out of work or working more hours or fewer hours. So, you know, as always, we're happy to answer those questions, and sometimes that's leading to some ticket assignments. There are a couple different strategies that we have used in approaching this new COVID climate. And the first thing that we did was to kind of take advantage of the fact that our referral sources in the VR offices, have always been a great place for us to get Partnership Plus ticket referrals, but it can sometimes be hard to get an audience with these guys. And right now, it seems like we've got a captive audience with the VR counselors. So we've been offering virtual trainings, and I put that out. I offered the trainings. I wasn't sure whether folks would be interested, and I was delightfully surprised that every single office we reached out to wanted to participate in those trainings, and we were able to do those. And we were getting referrals in real time while we were doing those meetings. I think these guys are working from home and have some flexibility to have these kinds of conversations with us that, you know, in other seasons they're maybe too busy to have. So just for example, in one of those meetings, we had 5 referrals come through for Partnership Plus, which is, you know, really exciting for one little county. You know, a lot of these guys are clients who are working in the essential industries that we've talked about. The other major change that we're seeing over at Choice Group, and I know you guys have talked about this some, is that we are a local EN, and we've always been primarily doing in-person services, and that's limited who we can serve to some extent, and COVID has really forced our hand into moving into a virtual service model, which is something that we've wanted to do, we've dabbled with, we've been debating, and now all of a sudden we're doing it. My guys are providing virtual services, and they seem to come up to speed on it overnight. And now with our marketing campaign and our access to being able to reach out to beneficiaries, we're going to launch, we've already launched a much bigger national marketing campaign, which we've not done before. So designating more staff and reaching out to more people. So I think COVID is definitely going to lead to some permanent changes for us. We're always going to have that local presence, but even when the world starts to open back up, we're going to be doing things in a different way. And, you know, virtual services is one of those things that's here to stay. And hopefully we'll just have a bigger scope of folks that we're able to serve right now. So thank you, guys.
No, thank you very much for sharing. And as I said, sometimes things that are not so good can turn into positive things. So I like how you have your captive audience now from the VR. So that is great. Let me see. Let's check. I wasn't sure if Lori Tindall with Ahead, is she on the line to share with us today?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Awesome. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for inviting me to speak today. And I really do echo some of the same sentiments from the other ENs. We're here in Pennsylvania, and we've been doing this, I guess, since it started back in 2001. Thankfully, a year ago, we equipped all of our staff with smartphones and tablets. So we were already pushing that virtual service, but obviously COVID pushed us a little bit farther, and we are working from home. And as Rachel said, we do have other We have other sources where we receive referrals through VR and, you know, other areas. And this has really helped our agency to be able to continue to work through the Ticket to Work and, you know, do these services virtually. One of the big ones is the career guidance and using those online resources and sharing screens, whether it's through Skype or Zoom. We've used the ONET online to really look at different types of jobs, especially for those ticket holders who are laid off at the moment. Do they want to return where they were working previously or start to look for something else? So that we've been giving a lot more time to that. We, too, have reached out to our OVR liaison for Ticket to Work when we've had a little bit of issue getting some ticket unassignments. We have a person who is also a captive audience to say, let me do some educating within our OVRs to help make that a little more of a seamless process, because we do rely on OVR, you know, to help, you know, reach those individuals who need our services through the Ticket to Work. I will tell you just a few numbers as well. This time last year through the end of April, we had 180 new ticket assignments. And this year, 2020, through the end of April, we've had 197. So we've actually had a little bit more. We've had an increase this year. And I think that credit goes to our staff and our team, you know, who really promote this and look, you know, internally as well as externally for those referrals. While we are here in Pennsylvania, virtual services has really helped expand our geographic reach, you know, outside of our particular counties, our region, and the state. So we are able to work with ticket holders that we normally wouldn't have been able to do. So this whole idea of how to provide those services will certainly stick around for us as well. And a few specific stories, if you will, for participants. We have had a couple of people, I know at Starbucks, some individuals have continued to get paid even if they're not working. And then if they did stay working, of course, there's that pay, the hazard pay they've gotten on top. We've had individuals get bonuses. We had recent placements at Amazon and Home Depot where their hours have increased. They want to keep moving. They want to keep going forward. We have a young woman who obtained employment at the Census Bureau. She loved going into work every day. She was a little reluctant to work from home, but she was able to maintain her job, work from home, and now she's happy about the flexibility when she can work and how she can flex her hours. And because of COVID, we have a another young woman who's making face shields for healthcare workers, and this has become a full-time position for her in her particular company. So we've had some successes. We've certainly had to do things a little differently, of course, getting some information to ticket holders and getting signatures and that kind of thing, but we're moving forward and hopeful that we can continue to do so. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today.
Well, no, thank you for helping us out with that and for sharing. Like I said, it's always better when we're able to see that we're not alone and others are going through the same thing. And I applaud everyone with their creativity and their positivity, and hopefully that shines through for all of us. And wonderful that you went up with your 196 ticket holders till now. Who would have thought? Okay, so I just wanted to just mention all of the ENs who helped us out today with that. Just appreciate Adelante, Mission Possible, Career Source Broward, Ahead, and the Choice Group. Thank you again, guys, for sharing. So we'll go back to the agenda, and I believe Katie Streisinger is up with the Ticket Portal and iTop Changes.
Hello. Good afternoon, everyone. We had a ticket portal release on Saturday, April 18th, so a month ago, and I wanted to take the chance right now to highlight the changes that were made with the release. Some of them you might have already noticed going into the portals in the last month. Others you may not have seen yet, but I wanted to walk everyone through the changes. The first is a change we made to reflect the recent policy change, effective February 1st, 2020. the Social Security Administration changed the policy for phase one milestone eligibility with SDR involvement. Prior to February 1st, SDR involvement with a successful closure prevented an EN from receiving any phase one milestones effective February 1st, 2020, as long as the successful closure was longer than 18 months prior to the ticket assignment. It no longer prevents an EN from receiving payments as long as the beneficiary achieves the necessary earnings and the other payment criteria are met. When the change went into effect in February, the ticket portal hadn't been changed yet with an update, and you were getting an edit that was preventing you from submitting the payment request using the portal, and we did tell you at the time to do it manually. The fix that was on the 18th, the restriction has been removed from the portal. So the portal is not going to give you any kind of message if there is a successful closure at any point in time on the beneficiary's record. You still need to do your due diligence to make sure that the closure was not in the last 18 months, because if it was, you are not going to be eligible for those phase one milestones because of the policy, but the portal will let you submit it. It's not going to do a check to see how long ago the successful closure was. So we are relying on you to look at that when you do the look back tool, but we have made it possible for you to request those payments without having to do it manually. Another change in the FACS additional information section of the portal, where you can go send in additional information with your payment request, you now have the option for the supplemental earnings statement as a document type. Previously, you had to use a different type to get it through. Now you can pick the actual document type, supplemental earnings statement. A big change that I think you'll notice when you go in is changes to the individual ticket status and use history screen. That is when you go in to look at a beneficiary that you're working with, and it shows you information about this on the screen. It's where their name is, the ticket mail date, the ticket termination date. It gives you an age range. There are two fields there. There is a field called earnings in the last 24 months. It would kind of give you an indication how many at child work level, how many at SGA. It didn't give you anything very specific, but it was just a broad category of earnings that you could use to let you know if you wanted to go and request a payment or check to see if a payment was available. That field had some problems with it. We had noticed some issues with it giving bad data. That field has been corrected and is now more reliable. So that field is available for your use. Another field that used to be on the screen was called impairment group. You will notice that that field has been removed. That field was also unreliable, and we weren't able to fix the core problem that was causing the issue. So rather than display data that was going to be wrong and cause confusion, especially when you're trying to determine if you need blind SGA for an individual or not, that field has been removed from the portal because we are not able to get the logic correct to show it to you at this time. And another just reminder, you know, we are going to be updating the ticket portal user guide. We have not updated it in a really long time, but we are going to get a new issue out to you, I would say before the end of the summer, so that you can see these changes. And I always do recommend, you know, if you have any questions, I would say start with your ticket portal user guide for anything in the portal. And we do have a help desk available whenever you have any questions. And I will give it back over to Adele.
Thank you, Katie. Appreciate all that information. Next up on our agenda, we have Jamie Pendergraft with Outreach Updates.
Thanks, Adele. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jamie Pendergraft. I'm the Program Outreach Manager at TPM, and we're happy to share that Outreach team has been very busy since the last time we talked. In the near future, we'll begin an opt-in text messaging campaign, which will allow interested people to sign up for information about the program that they would then receive via text message. And this is still in development, but we'll be sure to share more details with you all when it's ready. Switching gears a little bit, our next WISE webinar is next week on May 27th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's going to focus on working from home with Ticket to Work. Paula Vieye and Lori Adler from Employment Options will join Ray Cibula and share tips about working from home and how the ticket program can support people if they'd like to try working from home. As we heard from some of those ENs, lots of people are obviously interested in this topic. We have around 1,300 people signed up right now, so it is proving to be a pretty popular topic for our webinar, and I encourage you all to attend as well. And we did send out a Gov delivery yesterday with the registration information and also a request to share the information on your social media accounts. So be sure to check that out if you haven't seen it yet. And if any of you have any questions about sharing the webinar on social media, you're welcome to email us at socialmedia@choosework.ssa.gov. Switching over to success stories, we've also published a new success story since the last time we talked. I encourage you to visit choosework.ssa.gov and check out Matt's story. Matt, who is deaf, worked with Community Integrated Services of Pennsylvania to learn about available reasonable accommodations. He does use a sign language interpreter and a couple of other services, and learn about work incentives, and eventually he did work his way off of SSDI and is working full-time. Next week, we'll be publishing a story about Johnny, and Johnny had help from America Works of Tennessee and is now working full-time after dealing with a mental illness, and she also accomplished her dream of buying a home. We regularly send Gov delivery announcements asking you to share this type of content with your audience. Our success stories and other resources, including the WISE events, are a great way to introduce people to the program and emphasize that it really does help people achieve financial independence through work. And an event like the webinar is something where people can get a lot of basic information all at one time, and we always encourage them to follow up with the helpline and get that EN list and contact you all for more information. So we provide the introduction, and then hopefully we hand them over to you. And if you do ever have any questions about sharing things on social media, or you'd like to share an idea for a success story or something else, you can always contact us at socialmedia@choosework.ssa.gov. And with that, I'll turn it back to Adele.
Thank you very much, Jamie. And we have posted that there, socialmedia@choosework.ssa.gov, along with the choosework.ssa.gov for the WISE. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I think we are going to go ahead and open up now for some questions. So, Cassie, if you can help us out with that, what we'll be doing is we'll go from the chat to the phone line and get as many questions answered as we can today.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star one. We have no questions at this time.
Okay, no problem. I'm sure that we have quite a few in the chat. John, if you can help us out with that.
Absolutely. Our first question comes from Angela, who asks, given the fact that there is considerable COVID recession, will the Ticket to Work program be modified at all?
So I can take a stab at that, Adele. There's no plans for us to modify the program currently. We are always considering, program enhancements, initiatives to grow the program, engage more beneficiaries to bring them in. And I did mention the marketing business process previously. We also consider possible regulatory changes. And we do have our team working on that right now, looking at some potential options. As we indicated earlier in the year, the president's budget that was submitted to Congress back in January for FY21 had language in it that proposed moving the Ticket to Work program over to the Department of Labor. That's public information that's out there if you want to Google it. The best way I could characterize it is we are having deliberations currently with the Department of Labor. We've talked to the Office of Management and Budget. We're sort of in a holding pattern, of course, while we go through this pandemic. And, you know, obviously the Department of Labor is busy with the issues associated with workforce entities and the sharp increase in the number of unemployment insurance applications that they are trying to process. So I don't think there's anything immediate at all coming in regards to moving the program. The other thing I would mention in regards to that is that to move the Ticket to Work program to the Department of Labor would require legislation. And it doesn't appear as if there's anything moving on that front as well. So really, we don't see anything happening anytime soon as we, you know, are really towards the latter parts of FY20. So I would say there's nothing immediate coming on that end as well. So really, to go back to summarize, the answer to that would be it's business as usual. We continue to identify ways to help ENs grow and serve more beneficiaries. And, you know, part of this call today was to get, you know, ideas and input as far as what ENs are seeing with the pandemic underway. And we're always interested in getting feedback in regards to things that we can do to help mitigate any challenges that you're seeing. So that's, I think that's it in a nutshell.
Thank you for that, Rob. John?
All right. And our next question comes from Mary Lynn Rivore, who asks, is SSA noticing that ENs are terminating their contracts due to the pandemic, and are they needing to shut down employment? Has SSA noticed anything regarding that?
Hi,
so I'll start
Kara.
With that.
Go ahead,
Kara.
Rob. We are not seeing any ENs terminate their contract because of the COVID. And what was the second part, John?
Or shutting down operations. I think the first part basically answers that.
Yeah. I mean, I think some may be shutting down operations, but they have not let us know that. And that's why we reached out. If you're not doing that, and if that's your plan, it's understandable, but you do need to get in touch with the beneficiaries because they still may be seeking services.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, Kara, that that latter part is really important, and that was a big concern of ours, is we were very concerned about the impact on employment networks and then ENs shutting down and what would happen to beneficiaries. We have not, I would concur with Kara, we have not seen a lot of ENs close or stop their businesses because of this. But what we would ask is if your organization is encountering difficulties associated with the pandemic and or you think that your organization is jeopardized in some way, shape, or form, or you either have to suspend services or stop them for a period of time, that you would let us know and that, you know, we would like to work with you to build a strategy to address your clients and your clientele. So that's really important. If you have folks, if you're not able to serve folks for whatever reason, we definitely want to know, we want you to reach out to us. We want to see if we can help, and we want to see how we can transition those beneficiaries.
Thank you, Rob and Kara. John, let's take one more from the chat, and then we can check the line.
All right. Our next question comes from Judith, who asks, on the IWP, because we're working from home, if we can't get a signature, is there any way we can still proceed and be able to sign the tickets through the ticket portal?
This is Kara again. My question back to the EN is, are you able to get an electronic signature? The beneficiary must sign. We cannot sign a ticket without their signature. But we do accept electronic signatures.
All right, perfect. And that kind of that covers the answer to several questions. We'll pass it back to Adele.
Thank you very much, Cassie. Do we have any on the phone line?
Yes, we will take our first question from Lisa Cross-Shelton with Employment Connection.
Hi, Lisa.
Please go ahead. You may be.
I'm sorry, I had it muted. Good afternoon. I was wondering if someone could repeat the email address to express interest for the marketing business program.
This is Adele. Let me see if I can pull that up. I'll post it up on the banner. And as I pull it up.
And while Adele is posting that on the banner, I'll just go ahead and read that out. That's data.marketing.poc@ssa.gov.
Okay. I tried to send an email to it, and it bounced back to me for some reason, so maybe I'll try again. Thank you.
No problem. That was me trying to multitask and then wasn't responding to you. I wonder what happened with that. So let us know if that doesn't work again for you, okay?
Okay, thank you.
And so I just put it up, no problem. All right, Cassie, do we have another one on the line?
Yes, we will take our next question from Sonara Abbott with Abbott & Associates. You may have us on mute. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my access. I was wondering if with the marketing partnership that we could do with VRs, has SSA ever considered developing a national access to jobs for individuals with disabilities? The concern that I'm wanting to express is that I've noticed that there is a drastic change into remote jobs, but a lot of these jobs require a certain skill set. But we do have individuals who are, because they've been out of work for so long, excuse me, that they don't have the specific skill set. You know, so they're actually having to apply for entry-level positions. And I was wondering, is it possible to establish a national program for, we'll say, for states that we could collaborate together to provide jobs for those who are disabled versus them applying for positions on, you know, using different job boards?
So this is Rob, and I'm not entirely clear on your question, but I'll take a stab at maybe trying a response. You can let me know. So the short answer is no. We do have on the Choose Work website, Choose Work. .ssa.gov, I believe it is, there is a find a job page, but that consists primarily of what you refer to as job boards, essentially. But there's a variety of links there, and we have built that out pretty nicely for what it used to be as far as an actual tool that you can go into to try to find a variety of services. And that's everything from, you know, a list of jobs to resume services, job fair resources, recruiter access, other career resources, and then services for students, veterans, and so forth. So to some extent, you might be able to find a link that might help you through that website. And that is, if you Google Choose Work, and you will come onto our, that's our public forward-facing website, and then at the bar at the top, there is a Find a Job, a tab that you can click on that will take you there. So I would recommend that you start there and see what's available. There, obviously, there are other things that you can Google and, you know, type a search in to see what's out there in general. We're open to any thoughts that you may have if you'd like to email us at EN Services. As far as providing or facilitating access to some sort of training programs and so forth. Now, mind you that those things are cost money, so we'd have to have a budget and the money in our budget to, you know, facilitate that training. But we're always interested in ideas.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you very much for your question, and Rob, for helping out with that answer. Kathy, do we have more questions in queue?
No further questions at this time.
Thank you. Let's check back with you, John.
Sorry about that. Absolutely. Our next question comes from Jane, who asks, although site visits won't take place this year, will we still be doing a general audit of cases?
So what I missed that last piece. Will we be doing a general audit? What was the last part? Did I miss something?
General audit of cases. I believe she was referring to services and supports reviews, which, if I understand correctly, are still going to be taking place.
Right, that's correct. Service and supports reviews and any external sort of virtual program integrity initiatives that we currently have in place, such as services and supports reviews and the EN enhancement initiative. And we do also conduct audits remotely or what we call desk audits. All those things remain in place, and we are working on a plan B to sort of conduct virtual site reviews or at least virtual program integrity or reviews of organizations that were under consideration for a site review. So if we can't be there in person, we're going to still likely reach out and, you know, just touch base with the organization and review documents and so forth.
All right. And we have several questions that are along the same theme, and it's regarding the work-from-home policy. So I'm just going to kind of try and lump a couple of these together. First off, if you've already been approved to work from home, do you need to do anything special?
Hi, this is Kara. Once you're approved to work from home, no, there's nothing special that you need to do. It's carrying on business as you normally would, as best you could from home.
And I believe the context here is an individual who was working from home before the pandemic.
Oh, no, they don't need to do anything. We already have a work from home agreement with them.
Okay, perfect. And if you're not working from home, do you still need to submit the form?
No, it's only for those working from home. And I will put a little caveat. I'm assuming we have an agreement with you if you were working from home before, but either situation, we must have a work-from-home agreement with the EN.
Okay, perfect. And then our final question regarding this is there a way to confirm that you've received the work-from-home form?
You can contact EN Service at ssa.gov, and they should be able to confirm it for you.
All right, perfect. And when I answer that question, I'll post that publicly with the email, so everyone will have that. Our next question is regarding cloud services. We've actually got a couple questions together regarding that. Does the cloud usage form that SSA is sending out only apply to ENs that use cloud services?
It's not a form. It will be in the TTA as a guideline. So if you do, we're not telling you you have to use a cloud. I mean, some people are still using paper files, for example. But if you do use a cloud, it must be in adherence to the guidelines that we are putting in the new TPA. Hopefully that helps.
All right, perfect. And then how are you going to obtain information from ENs regarding the cloud requirement?
We're not. I mean, we already reached out to all the ENs asking them, are you using a cloud? What are you using? Just so we could survey it. But we have gotten guidance from our Office of Information Security, our Office of General Counsel, and that's what's in the TPA. So by signing the TPA, you're saying, if I am using a cloud, I am adhering to these guidelines.
And, Kara, this is Rob. I would also add that similar to what we do when we conduct site visits in terms of checking how PII is stored, we will also, for those ENs that we do or conduct a site visit to, we will verify during the site visit that if the EN is using cloud-based technology to store PII, that it conforms with the requirements in the TPA.
All right. And Adele, do you want to pass it back to see the phone queue?
We will do that. Just wanted to make sure that we have the email right, the emservice@ssa.gov. I think that was the last email that was referenced. So we've put that up. And Kathy, do we have any questions on the queue?
Once again, that is star one for questions.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
And no questions at this time.
Okay, John, are there any other ones that you have queued up?
Yeah, I'm just reading through them real quick. We've got another question regarding the pandemic. Will the PPR process be modified or changed due to unemployment rate?
So this is Rob. Timely progress review has been halted during this pandemic. We had launched a pilot once we made fixes in our system, which enabled us to restart TPR. We began a pilot last year, and we worked through an initial count of about 500 TPRs for beneficiaries. And so, of course, we were collecting data and analyzing our business process as we were rolling that out. We have decided since with this current pandemic and with the remote nature of services and particularly the document-oriented nature of TPR, that we would hold TPR until further notice.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that, Rob. Okay, we'll do a quick check for the phone line, Kathy, just to make sure there isn't anyone there ready to ask us questions.
No questions at this time.
Okay, Don, and I know you're going through those questions in the chat. Just want to make sure if we don't have any other ones in the chat that we want to bring out.
All right, so our next question is regarding the marketing business outreach. Dave wants to know if that's going to be replacing the administrative EN.
So just to clarify, is the question, does the marketing business process replace the administrative EN? Just asking for clarity.
Yeah, that's the question.
No, it does not. But an alternative would be that the administrative EN could conduct the marketing outreach on behalf of a subsidiary organization. So again, if you have questions pertaining to that arrangement, please send them in to us so that we can review and answer them. But it's not meant as any sort of replacement for administrative ENs.
All right. And our next question comes from Wendy, who asks, is there an alternative to faxing in pay stubs with the cover sheet when making a payment request in the portal?
So I don't know if Katie's on the line. Katie, would you like to address that?
I'm back. Could you repeat the question?
Absolutely. Is there an alternative to faxing in pay stubs with the cover sheet when making a payment request through the ticket portal?
The only alternative to the mail at this time. So you could make sure you got the cover sheet, and that would be the work case number on it, and you could mail it. That would be the most efficient way to give us the evidence you need for your payment.
And hi, John, this is Kim. I just wanted, like Katie was saying, that you can definitely mail it, but please let me know that they will need to submit the completed payment request form along with those pay stubs.
And this is Katie. I'll just chime in again just to make sure. So I'm assuming you've requested the payment via the portal, but you know that you need to fax in the pay stubs, right, to complete your payment. You selected the button knowing that you were going to have to fax something in, but at this time you do not have access to a fax machine, which we do understand that does happen. At that point, you have submitted a payment request to us, and now you are in the queue. And if we get to your payment request, and Kim will agree with me here, and you can follow up Kim after I talk, but you sent in a payment request attesting that you have the pay stubs and you're ready to send it to us. And so if you request it through the portal, there's a chance that we're going to get to your payment request and you have not followed up with that pay stub because you can't fax, and that is going to cause you to get a denial. If you know that you are not going to be able to fax in pay stubs, then you should not request your payment through the portal, and you should do, like Kim is saying, you should do the entire payment request through the mail. That is the best way to get us your payment. Did you want to add anything to that, Kim?
No, that is right, and I do know that we've had some ENs with that concern, Katie. I'm glad you brought that up. And just making sure that ENs understand, just like you said, whenever you submit your repayment request, at the time, we need all of the required documentation. There have been some questions about ENs having 9 business days. That is only if you're requesting information based on earnings already proven or something to that nature. But the 9 business days does not apply when you are submitting at the time of submission. If you're required to submit, and I'll just give an example of the proof of relationship, that needs to come at time of submission. And like Katie said, just if you're not prepared to send in a complete package, please wait, because we don't want you to have to get that denial and then have to submit your request again.
Well, thank you, ladies, for tag teaming on that payments question. Just a quick, I see we're approaching the half hour mark, and I just want to check and see, Cassie, are there any questions on the phone line?
Yes, we will take our next question from Sanara Abbott with Abbott & Associates. Caller, please go ahead. You may have us on mute.
Yes, thank you. I want to piggyback on the last question that was asked. If an individual, you're trying to obtain their pay stubs, and you know that they've made over the SGA and they're not submitting their pay stubs, how do you process a request for payment?
I'm sorry.
Well, this is Adele. I just want to appreciate the question. If someone could answer that really quick, but just a quick reminder that we do have a payments call that is scheduled, and we have a help desk that's available. And the next payments call will be on July 28th.
July.
If you can answer that really quick.
Okay, I just want to make sure I understand the question. Your question was, you know that they're making a certain earnings amount, but you do not have the pay stub?
No, they're making according to past history, the person may be making over SGA, okay? But okay. Trying to obtain their pay stubs is a little challenging. So in order to receive a payment for that person, knowing that they have made over SGA without the pay stubs, is there an alternative way of doing that to receive payment?
Well, let me just say all payments require evidence of earnings. So if you are requesting payment through the portal, you may receive the message that earnings are already established. And if that's the case and the earnings are established and all other payment criteria are met, then you can still submit your payment request without the actual pay stubs because the evidence of earnings may be in the system as long as they're verified earnings. So there are other third-party sources. There's the work number that you may be able to reach out to and get evidence of earnings. So those are the couple of things. If the earnings are already established in the system, and all other payment criteria are met, or if you go through the work number. But I would encourage you, like Adele said, we do have the all-in payments call in July, and we do have the in payments help there. So if the question was not answered on this particular call, I would just encourage you to reach out to the in payments help desk and let us see if we can further assist you that way.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, ladies. I appreciate that. Let's see, and I will check and see with Cassie for one more from the phone line, then we can check and see if John has any.
Yes, we will take our next question from Joe Tarsus with Careers Beyond Disability. We apologize, he disconnected. We will take our next question from Danielle Reber with Southwest Center for Independence.
Hi there. See, I need some clarification on the home office versus work from home role. I'm interpreting that to mean I can go to an office where the paper files are kept, but right now I'm working from home. Is that a proper distinction, or do I still need to submit the form that was sent out?
Karen, can you answer that?
Cassie, can we check? Is Kara still on the line?
Yes, Kara is on the line.
Okay.
Hi, I'm sorry. What, could you repeat that? This is Kara.
From home. And right now I'm working from home, but paper documents are kept in an office in town. And I would consider that I don't have a home office, but I'm working from home. Is that a proper distinction, or do I need permission to do that?
So how are you getting, define working from home? Like, you're saying the papers and everything are in your office, but how are you communicating with the beneficiary?
By the phone. We have a VPN to our private server, and so that's where documents are stored, and I can VPN from home.
So on the computer you're doing it?
Right, yeah.
So that's the thing. So with your home office, and I don't know your home situation, obviously, but there may be other people living in your house that could get onto this same computer. So what we're saying is we need to know how you're securing the beneficiary's PII. So is the computer password protected? You know, things like that.
So home office doesn't mean
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So home office, I guess I'm interpreting to mean I've got a file cabinet here and a fax machine and everything is done for my house, and that's just not the case.
No. And like, I will give you us, for example. We all have stuff in our office. We're all working from home right now at SSA. And the only thing we really have at home is our computers. But
yeah,
our computers are password protected. So, like, my children cannot get into my computer.
Yeah, okay, I would be in the exact same situation. Well, and then one step further is I live alone. But, yeah, password protected laptop, and it's the only work item I have at home.
Right, so we do have a form, Jenny or Tammy, I don't remember if it's online or not, but there is a form, and it's very simple. I mean, it's not writing a thesis or anything like that. It's a very simple form for you to fill out and send back to EM Service.
This is Tammy here.
Okay.
I'm just going to interject that we have the COVID work from home form that Kara just mentioned. That one you just signed to say, yes, we're doing what we need to do during this time to protect PII. And that just needs to be returned to EN Service. And you would have gotten an email out of from EN Operations with that form. And it sounds like that's all you need to do at this time.
So I heard about that form from another EN, but we did not receive that, and possibly because we're brand spanking new. So
okay.
Is it EN Operations that I need to email?
So if you could just email enservice@ssa.gov, they'll give
okay.
you that form to sign.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
All right, thank you. And I'm sure we'll get you squared away with that. Cassie, do we have any other questions in the queue?
Yes, we will take our next question from Joe Tarshis with Careers Beyond Disability.
Hello there. I know you wanted to postpone asking questions about payments until you have the next conference call. But I do have one quick one that has always bothered me, and that deals with when one of our beneficiaries have been working and their monthly check has stopped over a good year time frame. Over a year. It seems like we still do not automatically get payments on their last phase of our payments, and that we have to submit a form for each month asking for proof of income. It seems a little redundant to me.
Hi, Mr. Tarshis. Thank you. This is Del, and I know that I mentioned of our next call, but I think we're going to do you one better, and we're going to have your information, and we're going to have Kimberly Cutler reach out and help you a little bit with that one. Especially we're looking at the time, and I'd like to make sure that we capture what we need to capture here. So that sounds like that'll be just a little bit intensive. So I appreciate
okay.
you asking the question and coming back to ask that.
All right.
Cassie, do you have another one on the phone line?
Once again, that is star one for questions.
Okay. And John, do you have any one? Appreciate that, Cassie. Do you have any, John?
No, I think we're good on my end.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I do appreciate everyone's patience, and I know that we went after the call, we wanted to make sure that we serviced you with the time that was allotted for you. So, again, thanks again for joining us. Our next call will be August 18th. Thank you, everyone. Stay safe and have a great and wonderful
for your participation. You may now disconnect.